Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to AM 820 and 93.9 FM, WNYC.org. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings, filling in for Brian Lehrer. Text Haiti to *90999 to donate. Sound familiar? It was nearly ubiquitous for the first few weeks after the earthquake. And Americans responded by sending the Red Cross more than $35 million through their cell phones alone. But is the Red Cross really the best place for all that money to go? The giant organization was merely one of hundreds of NGOs with some presence on the ground in Haiti, but it received the lion's share of American donations, in part because of good name recognition and not because of the Red Cross's ability to deliver timely relief. One way of dealing with the Haiti problem of distributing aid is to pool donation resources in the case of a natural disaster and allow a regulatory body to be in charge of making sure the money goes to the right place. Joining us now to discuss the pros and cons of such a system are Peter Bell, the former president of CARE and now a senior fellow at Harvard's Hauser Center for Nonprofit Organizations, and Melinda Miles, founder of an organization called COMPE, Working Together for Haiti, and a spokeswoman for the newly formed Haiti Response Coalition. Melinda represents 25 small NGOs with existing operations throughout Haiti, and she returned from a trip to Haiti on Tuesday. Peter, Melinda, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Peter, let's start with you. What is the argument for pooling resources?
I think the essential arguments are, first, that humanitarian organizations have overlapping or shared missions. People out there really expect them to coordinate and collaborate. And it would make it easier for people who want to give and who may not know the specific organizations and would like to count on some sort of vetting process of their capacities and capabilities.
Right. Everybody knows the Red Cross. It has such name recognition, great marketing. My understanding is that it had less than 15 people on the ground at the time of the earthquake, where other smaller groups maybe had a lot more than that, were much more embedded in the country. And in some cases, the argument could be made those groups needed the money more or could have made better use of the money than the Red Cross. How would one decide that, though? If you have this pool, how does that pool decide who's the worthy recipient and how much of the pie they should get?
Well, there would need to be agreement beforehand on a set of standards to measure the capacities and capabilities of these organizations, and there'd have to be adherence to a set of common standards for excellence and responding to emergencies. And so this would really be important. It would also be important in any case to set aside some portion of whatever would be collected for the sort of core membership for those organizations that have a particular capability in the specific country where the emergency occurs.
Melinda Miles, founder of COMPE in Haiti, tell us about Haiti right now. There are literally hundreds of organizations there, right? Who's being effective and who isn't?
Well, it's true. Haiti has had quite a number of NGOs that have set up shop there over the last several years, the last couple of decades. And so we sometimes talk about Haiti as being saturated with NGOs. But what we've seen since the earthquake is that groups that have a long history have people on the ground and language capabilities or direct partnerships with Haitian-based organizations have had more effectiveness in getting out into communities. One of the things that major agencies confront are security restrictions that keep them from going into neighborhoods that are most in need right now. And so when you talk about, when Peter talks about a set of standards and a measurement of capacity, we see that's already going on, especially in Port-au-Prince, where our organizations are working together. We're going to the cluster meetings of the UN and the USAID missions, and we're giving to them assessments of different tent cities that have sprung up, these new communities. And by doing that, different organizations are able to show their capacity, to show the engagement they're having at a community level, and to prove the direct contact that's going to be necessary to distribute aid on the ground.
I wanted to circle back to something you were saying about security issues. So you're saying that some of the smaller groups that you're working with, I mean, doesn't safety cut across whether you're a small 25-person NGO or whether you're the International Red Cross? Or are you saying that the International Red Cross is unable to go to places that your group is able to go?
That's what I'm saying. The larger agencies have restrictions on where their personnel are allowed to circulate, especially in Port-au-Prince. And this is not something new. We've been hearing about it for the last few weeks. When the earthquake first struck, our people went into every community. They went down into Jacmel, where there were no medical teams for over 2 weeks. And we set up the infrastructure necessary to receive the first medical teams there. Now, after 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, we saw the larger organization, Médecins Sans Frontières, come down and take over the hospital there in Jacmel, and we were pleased to see them do that. However, in those first moments after the crisis, our groups were able to set up those structures when larger agencies couldn't. They had to wait for the proper military to be on the ground to secure the situation. And even today, we have relationships with Haitian leaders, community leaders in the tent cities, that enable us to go in and talk with them and do the assessments of what the communities need. And that's something that larger agencies simply cannot do.
Let me just interject for a moment. I think what Melinda is describing is really great, and I'm sure there are dedicated and very effective small NGOs that are doing precisely what she suggests. But it is also true that there are larger NGOs, take ACARE, for example, that have been in Haiti since 1954, and that had 130 staff members, overwhelmingly Haitians, on the ground when the earthquake hit. And I was in Haiti right after Tropical Storm Jean hit a few years ago, and there's no question that CARE, working alongside other NGOs, was the very first respondent among NGOs within Gonaïve. And it was great to see other NGOs working alongside. So I think that kind of coordination is very much needed. And it will vary in accord with the emergency and where organizations are located as to how quickly they can be on the scene.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Amy Eddings, filling in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking with Peter Bell, former president of CARE and now a senior fellow at Harvard's Hauser Center for Nonprofit Organizations, and Melinda Miles, founder of Compe in Haiti and a spokeswoman for the newly formed Haiti Response Coalition. And we're discussing whether there should be a new model for disaster relief fundraising instead of all the money going toward highly recognized organizations like the International Red Cross. Should there be a pool of resources so that some smaller non-governmental organizations get a piece of the pie as well? Melinda, do you think that you could have picked out which organizations would have been successful before the earthquake? I'm wondering about that process and how a pool would work. The Red Cross has argued against it, saying it adds another layer of bureaucracy between the organization and the money it needs to do its job. So I can imagine, you know, committees sitting around and trying to decide who gets what money and how would anybody know which is the best group to respond to a particular disaster and most worthy of donor dollars?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions in there. And to reflect back to what Peter just said, we really do need to see a level of coordination, and that will make it easier to know how to get the aid most effectively distributed. But I think the Hope for Haiti Now telethon was an example of pooled resources. And they have an advisory board that will decide amongst the agencies that will receive who will receive how much money and for what. And so I wouldn't want to see bureaucracy that further bottlenecks the distribution of aid, because that's been such a serious problem. But if there was heightened coordination and a strategy, which needs to be articulated by the Haitian people, but once that strategy is articulated, to be able to follow the path for development that Haitians themselves want to see. And I wanted to emphasize the importance of getting money to Haitian-based organizations, that job creation is going to be the most sustainable way to move forward in Haiti. And if we can get funding to our Haitian partners and their organizations, that's going to make a huge difference. And I think that Peter would agree, because we have seen how our Haitian counterparts and partners have been the most effective in deciding what strategies and then pursuing them on the ground.
Listeners, we have time.
I fully agree with everything that Amy has just said.
Okay, Peter, hold on 1 second. I want to see if I can get some callers in. We have time for one or two calls. Listeners, would you be more likely to give if everything was vetted? Did all of the different options for places to give in Haiti end up keeping you from giving? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment on our show page. That's the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Peter Bell, I want to return to you. In the case of Haiti, where there are already so many NGOs on the ground, you have a lot of options for where to put the money. Was the same thing true in the tsunami of 2004?
Certainly, there was. I mean, first of all, these responses go in phases. The first is the sort of heroic rescue phase, and then the phase of providing food, drugs, and other sanitation, other needs that people have simply to continue to survive.
I guess my larger question is, does this idea of a pool only work when you have a super saturated country with a lot of NGOs already in place? If you're talking about, flood in Kansas, where or even 9/11, for example, right? 9/11 is a very good example. Here on our soil, New York City.
I think it only applies when there is a major emergency. That is an emergency that is beyond the capability of the immediate area hit, or perhaps even the country hit, to cope with it on its own, where the emergency is such that it attracts the support and solidarity of people in a much broader part of the world. And that was certainly true in the tsunami. It was true of 9/11 in its way. It was true of Katrina. But it's also been true of many other emergencies over the years around the world.
We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We have time for a couple. Karen from North Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. In response to the question as to whether it would deter me from contributing if it were going to a central organization to distribute it, while the goals are good, the notion of adding additional overhead would concern me. And secondly, when I support an organization, I do homework to find out that the administrative overhead is such that I feel like most of the money is going to go where I want it to go. And the notion of having an overall authority, it would probably result eventually in the notion of let's be fair to everybody and distribute it evenly, even if it winds up going to some organizations that I wouldn't have supported if I knew that it was going there.
Karen, thanks for your call. Peter Bell, former president of CARE, I know this idea of a pool has operated before. Great Britain uses it. Does it devolve into everybody getting the same slice of the pie just to be equitable?
No,
does Karen
doesn't.
Have a point there?
I'm glad you brought up the case of the Disasters Emergency Committee, or the so-called DEC, in the UK. And it's been operating since 1963, and quite effectively, with a core group of 13 major NGOs in the UK. But putting aside, I believe, 25% of the funding for smaller NGOs or NGOs that may have more specific but less broad expertise. And so it's a successful case. And there are other countries where this has been tried, too, including Canada, Belgium, Italy, Germany, Switzerland, and I believe Australia.
So what, in your mind, Peter, and I also want to get your thoughts on this, Melinda, what is keeping this argument from going forward in the United States? I know that this idea of restructuring aid was talked about after the 2004 tsunami. It's one of the reasons why I brought it up. But now we're circling back all these years later, bringing up the same conversation. What prevents it from moving forward in the United States? Is it because of the clout of the Red Cross here?
I think part of it is, the question as to whether the Red Cross would participate or not, whether this would be in competition with the Red Cross, which seems more likely at this point, but not certain. Another issue in this country is that in the UK, if you get the buy-in of the BCC, you're pretty well set with the major media. And in this country, we have a much more diverse media setting. And that's more so that would be more challenging. It's really important to get media buy-in and support for this.
Melinda Miles, what do you think? What are the challenges facing having this kind of a pool of disaster relief here in the United States from your perspective?
Well, I think it's always hard to sort of change the culture of giving. And Karen just raised a couple of issues, the caller, about knowing exactly where her money's going and the question of overhead. And I agree with what she's saying on a basic level. We don't want to add more levels at which money gets sucked out of people's donations. However, I think the Hope for Haiti Telethon is a good example of a change that's already happened. They raised, a lot of money for a pool that their advisory board headed by George Clooney will then decide how that money gets split up. And so I hope that that is the beginning of a change of culture about this kind of fundraising.
Ranul from Flatbush, Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I'd be willing to give more money if I was really sure that the money was going to the proper channel. I give money to the Red Cross, and I give money to Yearly Haiti, Wycliffe Jean Charity. But for Wycliffe Jean Charity, I think I trust it maybe at 80%. But even the Red Cross, a couple of years ago, was investigated because they were using too much money on overhead costs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really trust them 100%. But what I do, because I'm Haitian American, I send money directly to the ground, to people, to friends and family, and they use the money to help those earthquake victims directly. So I think that's a better model. But you still got to watch where the money is going.
Ranul, thank you so much for your phone call. And he raises a good point where everybody's giving all this money to the Red Cross, and it's had a very checkered history recently in its criticism of its response post 9/11, criticism of its response after Hurricane Katrina, criticism of how much money its chief executive was making. But the Red Cross gets the bulk of the money because it's the brand that we associate with disaster relief. It's a very American and capitalist way of providing for relief, disaster relief. Is there what to do to address concerns of money going to the right place and at the same time spreading those resources around more equitably to smaller organizations while still vetting those organizations? Melinda, you want to take a crack at that?
It's a monstrous task, of course, but like you're saying, even these larger agencies that are getting the bulk of the money have checkered past. And I've always encouraged people to focus on, after the earthquake at least, focus on the organizations that you know are making a concrete impact. And the gentleman who just called in, the Haitian American, he's got a good point. A lot of Haitians and diaspora have always preferred to send their money directly to their family members at home. And there are enough agencies on the ground there and smaller organizations that people know personally the credibility and the reputation of different groups. And I'm very pleased to see the amount of funds that Partners in Health has been able to raise, because we know their track record. We know that they're very much working through Haitian people on the ground and have been in Haiti for so long. And so I'm surprised to see, maybe five times as much money going to the Red Cross. And I echo your concerns, especially of the way that the Red Cross has been criticized after Katrina for raising a lot of money and then never actually applying it to the crisis it was raised for.
Melinda Miles, founder of Compay and spokeswoman for the Haiti Response Coalition, and Peter Bell, a senior fellow at the Hauser Center for Nonprofit Organization at Harvard University. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
And the conversation continues online. Go to our website, WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show, and let us know what you think about pooling resources for Haiti. This is the Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Since the earthquake, we've been hearing from the Haitian diaspora here in New York and around the country. Next Friday, on the one-month anniversary of the disaster, the Green Space at WNYC hosts a summit on the efforts to rebuild in Haiti, moderated by Farai Chidea and Gary Pierre-Pierre, editor of the Haitian Times and a frequent guest on the Brian Lehrer Show. The event is free, but reservations are required. Follow the links on the Green Space at WNYC.org. Coming up, are you concerned about your Toyota Camry and its accelerator? We have some answers for you. Stay tuned.